and welcome to Behind the Screams. As always, my name is Ian, and in today's show, we are joined by two returning guests and two absolutely best friends of the show. Please welcome back Candy and Sean from the House That Screams podcast. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Glad to be back.
Yeah, glad to be here.
I am so, so happy to have the pair of yous back, because obviously last time you were here, we were talking about VHS, and we had a very interesting discussion about that movie.
We did.
Yeah.
And the listeners, they responded really, really positively to that episode. We got a whole host of downloads, which is always thank you to the listeners for downloading and listening. But yeah, I was absolutely delighted that you agreed to come back on the show. It feels like we've the three of us and between, you know, your show and my show, we were just talking about this. We've worked together quite a lot in the last few months, and we're going to be working together quite a lot in the coming months as well, because obviously but myself, Lucy and Lindsay, we're all going to be reappearing on your show. We've got Rob and David from your show coming on here in the next coming weeks, and hopefully we'll get more from you guys and others on your show as well. So before we get into sort of topics and things like that, if for anyone who's listening to potentially this show for the very first time, why don't you guys tell our listeners just a little bit about your show and what you guys are working on just now?
I'll take that one. I'm kind of the mouthpiece. We are the House That Screams. Obviously, we are a horror podcast. You should be familiar with us, I hope, at this point. But you can find us at House_Screams on Twitter. I'm sort of, like, as being the mouthpiece, I sort of run all of our socials. So you can find more on Candy the Final Girl on Instagram, where I talk about the show a lot, and also makeup, got a makeup horror project going on. But yeah, we just ended season 3 and we're starting our season 4, just heading right in with a double feature. We always start with a double feature. It would be Poltergeist 1 and 2.
Yes.
I'm Sean. You can find me on Instagram at Sean of the Dead. Pretty much just cat photos and skate. So.
I pretty much do all the promo.
She's better at it.
There's always one on the show that's better at doing things.
I'm the behind the scenes guy. I do all the editing.
Yeah, this is why I get other people involved in the show. It'd be like, because everyone is better than me at doing things. So I'm just like, you guys, you come on the show and you guys take this responsibility away from me, because I'm not very good at it. So, what is your upcoming episode? You said, is it Poltergeist 1 and 2? Is that what's coming up next for you? What should our listeners be listening out for?
So the next release is going to be Brain Damage.
Yes.
After school special episode. We have two of those actually in a row, but Brain Damage, the Frank Ken and Lauder film, is our next release.
And we take a very different turn on that, and it's very interesting. It's kind of something we noticed that we hadn't noticed on previous viewings that really changed the way we saw that film.
And it was a project by me. You know, I went into this like, I'm gonna change everyone's mind about this film, and I managed to do it. Very proud of myself.
Well, and so you should be, because I know that with the greatest of respects, that you're there's some strong opinions on your show from some of your hosts. So
We are very outspoken and we really don't have any tact. So
no, I love it though, because sometimes that's just the best way to be, especially around when you're sort of having these sorts of discussions. Sometimes I find when I'm trying to check out a new show, or I'm trying to, you know, sort of scour for guests and things like that, I get a little worried about it, that sometimes people can just be a little bit too afraid to say a differing opinion from either the hosts or someone else on the show. And we need to move away from that, because the whole thing about that, like, I love having people on this show, you know, that have very different opinions from me, because it allows us to, you know, have that debate, and it really can raise some really interesting topics. So I absolutely love coming on, because I think the last time I came on your show, there was a, I think it was 13 Ghosts, we there was a small sort of remake debate going on, and I'm sure we might get into a very similar topic to today. And you know, there were some different opinions, and I love having those sorts of discussions with people. It's one of the reasons why, you know, I try to stay as active on things like Twitter as I can, because obviously for the things that we post, because I love having, you know, finding different, as long as it's done respectfully, of course. But I know I absolutely love that. So yeah, did you guys plug where your show was?
Yeah, I
Yeah,
think so.
okay, I'm totally scatterbrained. But yeah, people, anyone who's listening, if you haven't checked them out already, check out the House That Screams podcast. And they really are a great show. They've got some wonderful, wonderful hosts on there, some really great guests on, including yours truly from time to time. So yeah, please, please go check that out. If you want to find us on social media, go to Twitter at Screams Behind, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube is at Behind the Screams Podcast. If you'd like to support us more than just listening to the show, you can also sign up to our Patreon from just £1 a month. That's patreon.com/behindthescreens. We are also on Twitch. We stream there 4 nights a week, although that schedule has been slightly higher than normal. So that's twitch.tv/behindthescreamspodcast. And we're also on TikTok. You won't find my ugly mug there on TikTok. You will find Lindsay's, though. She runs our TikTok page, so go to that, search for Behind the Screams podcast on TikTok. Now, I don't actually think I've introduced we've been going for 6.5 minutes. I don't think I've introduced what we're actually talking about in today's episode. We're going to be talking about the 2003 movie Wrong Turn. So guys, are you ready just to get into this movie discussion?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Let's do it.
Okay, we are talking about Wrong Turn.
Are you all right? I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I just found this tied to a tree back there. Somebody did this.
We're looking for a phone.
Sweetheart, baby, seriously, this isn't funny.
This movie was released in 2003, directed by Rob Schmidt, and stars Elijah Dushku, Desmond Harrington, and Jeremy Sisto. The IMDb plot is as follows. Chris and a group of 5 friends are left stranded deep in the middle of the woods after their cars collide. As they venture deeper into the woods, they face an uncertain and blood-curdling fate. Now, for I'm sure horror fans out there know very, very recently, the 2021 remake of Wrong Turn was released to streaming services. Have either of you seen that yet? Because I've not seen it.
No.
No.
No interest.
You have no interest in seeing it whatsoever.
That's a little preview.
Is that because And like you say, I'm sure that's a preview to what we're going to be discussing about. Is that because of how you feel about this movie or how you
yes.
feel about remakes?
How I feel about this film.
Okay, right. So that definitely gives me a big old hint as to where we're going.
Oh, you have no idea, Ian.
Okay, well, before we get into specifics then, I'll give you an opportunity just to give your overall sort of thoughts on this movie.
Me?
Yeah. I'll go.
You go. Okay. We're sitting trying to figure out.
So when I was seven, my grandmother gave me some money, maybe for a birthday. And you know, we're talking $20, which, you know, nowadays isn't a whole lot, but at seven, that was huge. And my dog got a hold of it and ate it. And I had to follow that dog around until eventually the dog shit it out. And I had to dig that $20 bill out of a pile of dog shit. That's kind of how I felt when we watched this movie.
I'm trying so hard not to laugh, I'm sorry.
I was like, where is he going with this?
And I'm, you know, not to be, you know, too disgusting or graphic, or, you know, to have anybody picture a 7-year-old digging through a pile of dog shit. You know, this film was, I have a lot to say about this film, but, and so I'll keep this brief, but it was like trying to dig a $20 bill out of a pile of dog shit.
Okay. I am now picturing that. Thank you.
I was trying so hard not to laugh.
Okay, Candy.
Well,
how do you top that?
Like a fairy tale. I'm trying to give a short. This movie is like if Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Hills Have Eyes had an incestual baby and it was stillborn. and also just a little hint. I don't know how familiar you are with America, but Virginia, you know how there's like always a bad neighborhood where you lock all the doors when you drive through? West Virginia is that bad neighborhood in America.
Oh, right. Okay. See, I wasn't.
You lock your doors. You don't get out. Cause I used to have to travel through there to get to Virginia to visit my aunt all through my life, growing up. And in West Virginia, we don't get out of the car. We go through West Virginia just to get the fuck out of there.
Wow, okay. I didn't know that. See, the thing is, here in the UK, we lock our car, we lock everything everywhere. There is no places where you don't lock your car doors or lock your homes and things like that. Everything just gets locked here. Well, I'm very pleased to say that I'm probably going to be the odd man. I kind of like this. So I'm sure we're gonna have a very interesting discussion about it. Now, as you know, on this show we tend not to go through things sort of scene by scene because that can be incredibly long-winded, and you know, we could end up talking about this. For me though, I turned myself up way too loud there. I kind of like this movie. This movie's not good.
No.
I think for me, this movie really sort of centers around three or four really key scenes, and then there's just a lot of filler in there. You know, so we're talking about the scene in the cabin at the beginning. We're talking about the scene in the watchtower, and you know, the final confrontation and things like that. And then sort of aside from that, everything else for me is just really forgettable. So since neither of you are fans of this movie, is there anything that you can take from this movie as a positive?
I really like the two main characters as actors. I like Eliza Dushku and Desmond Harrington. I think they're great in other things. They're great in this film, but you know, it wasn't enough to like save it, but I do like their acting, and the effects were good.
Yeah, I would go with that. I think the effects in this movie are pretty decent as well for the time. Sean, what about you?
For the most part.
What about you?
I'm kind of on the same boat that she is. That was the $20 bill was the special effects for me. and I love Desmond Harrington because I remember him from Dexter. If you're familiar with that show, he was the Detective Quinn on there. And I had not, this film flew under the radar for me. So we just watched this for the first time yesterday.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I say flew under the radar as I hadn't watched it. I knew of it. Mm-hmm. And actually the funny thing is, you know, all of the movies from the late 90s, early 2000s kind of like blend together for me.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started this film, I actually had mistaken this film for Joyride. If you're familiar.
Yes, I'm very familiar.
Too.
It's called Roadkill. It's called Roadkill here in the UK. It's not called Joyride.
Interesting.
I don't know. We don't really have joyriding here. It's not really a thing here. So I don't know if that had something to sort of do with it or. But yeah, they changed the name for the UK. But with Paul Walker and Ted Levine.
Yeah.
I actually quite like that movie. I think it's got a really sort of cool concept to it as well.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and I, you know, the concept of, you know, being stranded in the backwoods of, you know, what we would call like Hickville here is, you know, I mean, okay, cool. Yeah. Interesting concept, but I think it's been, you know, it's been done so much better. Like she said, in The Hills Have Eyes and in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that I didn't feel like I got anything new out of this.
Yeah. If I could like throw in on that, there are so many scenes that are almost exactly taken from those two films. Like when they're with all the cars, that is literally in Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
Might add, in 2003, there was the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre with Jessica Biel.
Yes.
And that was a phenomenal fucking movie.
Yeah.
And this, which was trying to be it, and it's just like, it just... It pales so badly. It looks so badly next to that film.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, by the way, because Texas Chainsaw Massacre is one of my favorite sort of remakes of all time. There's a few that
I think
I like more, but you know, it's a really, really high quality remake. And you're right, this does have very sort of TCM / Hills Have Eyes vibes to it, but. Yeah, you're right. It pales in comparison. The Hills Have Eyes, ironically, another movie where I think the remake is pretty darn good.
Yes.
But yeah, it really does sort of pale in comparison to those movies, doesn't it? It doesn't really sort of come close, and almost comes across a bit sort of plagiarism, isn't it, going on there? It just feels like they're very much lifting certain aspects of those movies and dropping them into this one.
Definitely.
Okay, right. So, I know we're going to talk more about this movie, but I do want to sort of touch on, and we sort of briefly touched on it there, this whole issue around remakes. Because as we were saying, I know none of us have seen the 2021 remake of this, and you guys aren't really interested in it. But there's people out there who just don't like remakes just for existing. And, how do you guys feel about sort of the remakes of the classics? You know, I feel like we've had some really good ones. We've had some really not so good ones. If let's just say, for example, next week we are announced that we're going to get another remake of Night of the Living Dead. How would you feel about that, for example?
Okay, I'm a little pissed off about that. I got to tell you, I'm dyed-in-the-wool Romero bread. But I got to tell you, our highest episode ever like downloaded is the 1990 remake, the Tom Savini directed Night of the Living Dead, which we do like on the show. We are all fans of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the original, but I'm like, do we need another one? It's already been remade, and that one's just getting its renaissance right now, the Savini remake, because it was like universally hated by a lot of people. But I always loved it, and on our show, like, literally it's our most listened to show, so a lot of people out there love it. Like, why do we need another one?
Was the thing is, because I remember sort of having, when I was on the show last, I can't remember who I was having sort of the debate with, and someone had brought up the point that, you know, for them to consider a remake successful, it must be better than the original, which is a sentiment that I do not agree with, because there's a lot of remakes out there.
No.
There's a lot of remakes out there that I really like, but I still like the original more than. So I'm just sort of interested to get these sorts of perspectives around remakes, because I probably will see the 2021 remake of this. But the other thing that sort of I noticed when I was, you know, scouring through the internet, and when, you know, the new one had been announced and things, there was a lot of people sort of really critiquing it for not staying true to the original, blah blah, and, you know, and I get that sort of sentiment when it's from a highly successful movie, but in here I was thinking they're remaking Wrong Turn, you know, they're not playing with Shakespeare here.
Yeah, and not to mention there were like six sequels that were just increasingly more like, you know, exploitative and added female nudity and things like that, just to get people to watch it because they were direct to video. And I mean, with this film, I don't get it. I mean, I'm just not interested in it. But like, in general, my thought on these remakes are, if you can do it, keep this the feel of the original story, but add something that works to it, then you are successful with your remake. Mm-hmm. I'm mad at remakes. Sometimes it's annoying, but for the most part, like, I'll give them a shot.
Yeah, and if I can just jump in on that, it depends on what we're talking about. And I think a lot of the remake material depends on whose hands it falls into. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, I'm really looking forward to the new Candyman.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, like your example, something like Night of the Living Dead, like, you know, we love the Tom Savini version. If they were to remake that tomorrow, and let's say it was Ari Aster who did it, I would be on board, because I love everything that he's had his hands on, you know, or, you know, Flanagan or Eggers, you know. Those are some directors that I think might be able to do something interesting with it. You know, we covered on one of our episodes the remake of Dawn of the Dead, Zack Snyder's version. And I went into that just, I was going to absolutely shit all over that film because I'm not a big fan. And hearing the conversation that everybody else had about that film, it changed me. And by the end of that episode, you know, I think I rated it pretty, a lot higher than what I had intended to rate it. I love the original Dawn of the Dead, and Zack Snyder's version is nowhere near that. But I saw the things that I was missing, and it took some people, you know, to kind of point those out. But, you know, like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake I thought was great. But then we get into like Nightmare on Elm Street and the 13th remakes, and not a big fan at all.
I don't mind the Friday the 13th remake, but I think that's more just because I really like the sort of schlocky aspect of those movies. The Nightmare on Elm Street one, I'm totally with you for. But you're right, I totally get your point, you know, when you're talking about specifically, you know, their Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, in terms of, you know, you really don't, you still much prefer the original. But, you know, and especially, you know, when you have a conversation with people, sometimes, like you say, you do see things that you maybe missed, and you see sort of different points of view. I mean, it's well known on this podcast, my favorite horror movie of all time is Halloween. Do I like the Rob Zombie Halloween better than I like the original? Absolutely not. But I still think that his first one, anyways, don't get me started on the second one. But the first one, I think, is a pretty darn good movie, with a couple of if you just cut a couple of scenes out of it. You know, I think the 2018 sort of remake, sort of reboot of Halloween 2 is one of my favorites of the franchise. Do I like it better than the first one? No, but you know, people get the point. So I think the whole sort of crux of my argument is that people just need to give remakes a chance. And I get get what you're saying as well, in terms of, you know, whose hands is it in? You know, if you find out that, you know, for example, the Chucky TV series we've got, we know for a fact that, you know, Don Mancini's back involved, and we've got Brad Dourif back involved, and you know, people are getting really excited about that. But if you heard that, I don't know, I'm trying to think of something like Steve Beck or Paul W.S. Anderson was directing, you maybe wouldn't be quite as excited about it.
Right.
But let me sort of try and refocus us back onto this back onto this movie. Now, one of the big issues I kind of have with this film is it's not, and it's going to sound bizarre, right? It's not dirty enough. And let me sort of explain myself, because throughout this entire movie, these people are very clean. There's not a lot of, you know, mud and dirt and blood and or sweat. You know, it feels very sort of surgical from their aspect. I don't know, like, did you guys pick up on this?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
How do you feel about it? Like, because I mean, aside from the odd little sort of cut wound, I think Eliza Dushku has one little blood stain on her very, very white vest. And it remains a very, very white vest for the entirety of the movie. And, you know, I forgot his name, Chris, you know, he gets shot in the leg, but, you know, there's not really that much blood. And did that bug you guys?
It definitely bothered me. I can't walk out my front door with a white shirt on without getting something on it. And yeah, to see them walk around in their, you know, supremely clean clothes, you know, like you said, she just had like that little blood stain on her shirt. And, you know, I mean, all the way through to the point to where she's tied to the fucking bed, you know, in that dingy ass cabin. And like, she comes out smelling like roses. I mean, she, it kind of, you know, and I don't want to say it took the realism out of it, because I mean, come on, realism in a, you know,
in this film,
but it, you know, it does kind of throw you for a loop. It was just one more thing. I mean, I felt like Candy and I were kind of riffing this movie almost like a Mystery Science Theater.
We were making fun of it the whole time.
And it was definitely one of the things that we kind of joked about.
And I have to say, you know, with like the clean factor, I agree with you. Like when Chris gets shot in the leg and they bandage it up, it's like there's no blood. His pants are ripped, but there was no blood that like even came through the pants. They're just clean pants that are ripped. And I think a dirty aspect, you know, with them being kind of gritty looking and sustaining actual injuries, like when they jump down this magical leap to the trees where they're all safe and fine and hurt. You know, maybe add some injuries and some dirt, you know, like, you know, something. You would have get at least scraped. And none of that happened. I think it would have maybe added to, you know, this film being a better film.
What I think is, I completely agree with both of you there, is, you know, that wouldn't have solved the issues with this film. But what I think it does is, as a viewer, it makes us a little bit more forgiving for certain aspects that may the other aspects that they might not have got right, you know, like that.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about as well, you know, you're saying realism in this film, but that little bit of realism, you know, just pulls us in that little bit more. And, you know, okay, like some of the other things that we're probably going to talk about, you know, we maybe have just might have forgiven one or two of those things and just sort of let it fly under the radar a little bit, and, you know, just overall felt a little bit more sort of positive around this movie. So I definitely agree with both of you there. So obviously, I don't think the cat was let out of the bag quite a while ago that neither of you are fans of this movie.
No,
so,
no.
Why don't you tell us what did you find most egregious about this film? I know we've already sort of talked about kind of being a bit of a ripoff and you know, playing off of very sort of Hills Have Eyes and TCM, but in terms of maybe specifics, in terms of, I don't know, scenes or aspects of this movie, what did you find sort of most egregious?
Okay, well, my problem is like the sloth makeup, you know, sloth from Goonies. That's what the hillbilly cannibal, like, I guess they're cannibals, we never see them eat people or anything. They're supposed to be cannibals, I guess. But they all look like sloth from Goonies. And I'm like, okay. But, you know, also there's just like some convenient things that are just too convenient. Like, okay, they just massacre all these people, but when they get a hold of Jesse, played by Eliza Dushku, they tie her up conveniently. So Chris can save her, you know. And I'm just like, why wouldn't they kill her? Because they just killed the cop for just asking a question. They, you know, they're just killing all these people, you know, more than they could eat. They clearly, I don't know why, if they're supposed to be cannibals, like there's just way too much food. Yeah, so I mean, and I didn't really care for the way that they looked. I mean, it was cool for a minute, but then when you get the close-ups, I'm like, it was better when you kind of left them a little obscured. It was just like, I don't know if they were trying to make them look more monstrous. It didn't read for me. Like, they didn't have to look that way. Like, if they look like the dude at the gas station, like, you know, with the one tooth or whatever, that would have worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So the hillbilly at the gas station when he comes off the highway is probably the most realistic version of a
Hilljack.
of a mountain man, from West Virginia. I did enjoy the makeup that they did. You especially get a really good close up of one of the guys at the very, very end. Three Finger, I think was his name. Mm-hmm. I called him the Assassin's Creed hillbilly because of when he was climbing through the trees and shit. But I guess one of my biggest nitpicks that I found out right at the beginning, we had talked about Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, was the fact that Lindy Booth was in this. And I absolutely could not stand her character in Dawn of the Dead. All she did was chase a dog and spray paint graffiti. So, you know, the fact that she was in this kind of threw me for a loop, but I was glad to see that she got killed very early on. So that was a plus.
There was a cheer.
And the Watchtower scene, really kind of, it was kind of jarring for me because at one point they're up there looking out the window and it's playing like this really like sentimental, like score. It came out of nowhere. Like it was like this beautiful sunset and they're staring out the window and I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? And, you know, and then of course they're hiding from these mountain men, but they light all these fucking glow sticks. Turn the radio up as loud as it can fucking go, you know? And it just, everything seemed like very predictable to me. You know, like you said, Halloween's your favorite horror film. Texas Chainsaw Massacre's mine. Mm-hmm. The original. And I just, you know, I guess maybe I was comparing and contrasting with that a little too much. Yeah, but it just, you know, I just felt that there were a lot of predictable things. The fact that you're in this tall wooden watchtower and you've got these hilljacks coming at you with torches, like the first thing Candy and I said was, they're going to set it on fire. And sure enough, they did. So it's like, you know, in a lot of horror movies, especially poorly done horror movies, you've got characters that have never watched horror movies before and or any films, which is sad when Jeremy Sisto actually points out Deliverance at the beginning, like they don't know what the fuck's going to happen to them.
We all know what happens in Deliverance.
Yeah, absolutely. And you stole one of my biggest sort of gripes that I have with this movie, and it was the fact that she lit like three glow sticks. Like you're hiding from these mountain men, I think they're sort of described as, and you just absolutely publicizing your location, honestly. I think that's one of the big things, you know, is just the sheer sort of stupidity of the decisions that these characters make, like you're saying.
And I also have one more if I can add.
Of course.
It's something that Sean and I both agree on. So like when they jump out of the watchtower and onto the trees. Now, in my childhood, I was a bit of a tomboy. I was very feminine, but I was also a tomboy. So I climbed a lot of trees. And I would get scraped up really bad, you know, going from branch to branch. And so they're in these huge trees. They have to land perfectly on it. And they have to all land in together. And nobody's scraped, nobody's hurt, nobody's got the wind knocked out of them. And then they're doing like this balancing act. It looked kind of cool, but it just took me out of the film because I'm like, at least one of those people was going to be dead. Somebody was going to miss. Nobody has that perfect aim, going to land perfect and grab on and, you know, and just be fine.
And I think it was Eliza Dushku's character that she was the third one to jump and she like slammed her ribs onto the limb. I mean, fuck, my chest hurt. Just
yeah, she's all like perfectly having a conversation.
Back up, perfectly white shirt, no tree sap, no...
No scratches. No
and when she jumped out the window as well, she kind of jumped kind of backwards.
Yeah.
She jumped very awkwardly. And I definitely picked up on that as well. You know, you were saying there, you know, Sean, about, you know, how you were comparing this to Texas sort of Chainsaw Massacre, and like, and I think you said it, Candy, like, you can't not compare it. Like, if you're making a movie of this ilk, you know, you're making something that has these sorts of themes. These are the monsters that you're talking about. This is the location. You have to know that this is absolutely what your movie is going to be compared against. Why would you choose to watch this movie over something like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which, you know, is one of the most sort of revered horror movies of all time? It's definitely one of the most sort of influential horror movies of all time. You know, it's very much up there. Why would anyone choose to watch Wrong Turn over that?
Yeah, I think the, you know, the films that came out in the late 90s and the early 2000s, excuse me, they were geared towards like the teenage, you know, slasher fan, you know, and horror films go through these phases, you know, like in the 80s, it was all about real, really gory practical effects.
Exploitation.
And then
big hair.
yeah. And it gets into the 90s and, you know, that exploitation kind of like fades into the background. You don't see it as much. It's still present, you know, and especially in direct-to-video releases and stuff. But, you know, you go from the 90s into the 2000s and jump scares become more prevalent. And which, you know, Candy and I both, you know, feel the same about that, that they're kind of cheap.
Yeah.
And
cheating.
And so I think like in the late 90s and early 2000s, they're kind of like, you're kind of like stuck in the middle between these two like great decades of horror films. And so, you know, I think I had reading about this film afterwards that they originally, the characters were meant to be older.
Yeah.
But they wanted to gear it more towards a younger audience, which I would imagine is probably why there's no nudity.
Which I found quite funny as well, because, you know, when they were saying they were supposed to be older, I had read that they were supposed to be in their late 20s.
But yeah.
Instead,
yeah.
We're playing, yeah. Like someone being in their late 20s is, that's ancient, you know, for a younger audience, you know.
I was 23 when this movie came out.
I was a little bit younger than that, but I won't go into details about that. I don't want to make anyone feel bad, but you know, like, fair enough, if you were planning to have these characters in their sort of late 40s or their 50s or whatever, and you wanted to take that down to, you know, someone in their 20s. But I mean, these characters were only meant to be in their late 20s anyway, you know, and I'm in my late 20s now, so I don't feel like I am, I don't know, maybe that's just something that happens to you when you start becoming an adult. Like, I don't particularly feel like I'm so out of touch just yet. I think I personally feel like I'm a few years off of that, but don't know, maybe I'm deluded.
No, you know, I'm 41 and I can remember what it's like to be, you know, we have a daughter that's about to turn 21. I remember what it's like to be her age. We have a son that's 14. I remember what it's like to be 14. I don't feel like I'm that in touch, you know, because you think that when you're younger, you think, okay, somebody who's 41 can't understand me. But and when you're 41, you're like, oh, I totally, yeah, I can understand you.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
From once you get to that age.
Absolutely. And okay. But I completely agree. Like, they're obviously trying to appeal here to a younger audience. And, you know, I don't know if that's maybe, because especially as well, you know, when you think of our sort of fandoms for horror, and, you know, you guys talk at length about your love for all things Romero and other horror as well. You know, we're not going to sort of pigeonhole ourselves into this, but you guys talk a lot about your love for Romero, and I talk about a lot in this show about, you know, my love for Carpenter and amongst others. And, you know, we've really sort of lived our entire lives with these movies, you know, and these movies mean a lot. Not Wrong Turn doesn't mean a lot to me, but like these movies mean a lot to us. And do you feel like perhaps by doing that, they've sort of created for themselves a little bit of a cult status? Because there does seem to be a bit of a cult following for the whole franchise, including those sort of really later horrendous movies in this franchise.
Yeah, I would imagine, and I'm not, you know, to the people listening to this, if you're a fan of this, I'm not trying to be a dick, but I would imagine that most of the people that are fans of these films live in West Virginia.
I know, you know, honestly, I think the people that, you know, where this cult status comes from, they really didn't, they're younger than me. They didn't grow up watching the classics like Texas Chainsaw, Hills Have Eyes, stuff like that. They didn't grow up on that stuff.
Yeah.
So they didn't have it to compare it to. You know, to them, it was this completely, you know, original or different idea to them. And, you know, this was their first, like, sort of integration into this sort of horror film, this sort of genre, that, you know, with the Cannibal Hillbilly type. And, you know, if they were to go back and watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Hills Have Eyes, or any other films like that, those are the main two, they would probably have a different opinion on it than we do. You know, I'm just saying, like, that's where we started. So, of course, we're going to compare it. So it was geared toward younger people who probably didn't have that exposure.
Yeah.
For a good movie.
Yeah. And you know, as a comparison, so our son, Ash, he's 14. And we have tried to, you know, introduce him into the world of horror. And he will sit and he will watch a film like Paranormal Activity. Mm-hmm. And he may enjoy it, but we take him back and we set him down and had him watch The Exorcist with us. We get done and we look at him. We're like, what do you think? And he was like, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm thinking when I was your age, it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah. You know, and so there's this generational thing where, you know, younger kids today, they go back and they watch some of the older movies from the 70s and the 80s. And they don't get from it what we got from it when we were their age.
Yeah, I completely agree. We did The Exorcist not too long ago, I think in the last sort of 6 or 7 weeks. We finally did The Exorcist on the show, and we had the sort of discussion. We were, you know, The Exorcist is often cited as, you know, the scariest horror movie of all time, isn't it? It's always, or yeah, it's at least in that conversation. But I think when you're talking about things like that as well, you have to judge them in the era that they came out, don't you? Because, you know, of course something that's going to be scary to someone in the 1970s isn't necessarily going to be scary to someone in 2021. You know, simple fact, you know, religion just isn't such an important thing for so many people as it was 50 years. I mean, we're talking almost 50 years ago,
you know. Yeah,
people have to take those sorts of things into account, because, you know, when we're doing, again, those sorts of discussions on our social medias and things like that, and, you know, we're talking about people's unpopular opinions and stuff like that, the amount of responses I get and goes, oh, The Exorcist isn't even scary. And I was like, yeah, in 2021, it's not. But back in...
I still think it's eerie.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's me recalling the first time and the other subsequent times that I've watched it, and the fact that, you know, my mother showed it to me at such a young age, and it just left this impact on me. But, you know, it's just sort of when you got into horror, what you got into it with, how deep into horror are you, you know, there's a lot of factors.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm very much aware, and it's probably a comment on the actual movie that we're just supposed to be discussing today, that we're discussing
we're really good at this.
Well, you know, we're really good at padding out an episode about a bad movie. Between our two shows, we've covered some stinkers of movies. So we're absolutely well versed at this. But just to sort of take it back a little bit, we talked briefly about, you know, some of the effects in this movie earlier, and I know we've obviously talked about as well the fact that, you know, there's no real blood in this movie, which I found quite interesting, because when I was looking up reviews of this movie on Rotten Tomatoes, one of the critics was like, oh, it's just a gory mess. And I was like, are you watching the same movie as me?
No,
are?
Way? No.
But, right, you know,
maybe try like Wolf Creek or something.
Yeah, well, change their fucking mind.
Covered that one on the show recently too. I fucking love that movie.
yeah, me too.
The movie messed me up.
Absolutely.
It was great.
But, you know, use both. I don't know if you both did, but Sean, you sort of cited that if the effects in this movie that we do see are actually pretty good. For me, that's probably the strongest aspect of this movie.
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, the makeup effects on the Hillbilly's faces, I thought looked really well, and my favorite kill in this was the in the tree with the axe.
Yeah.
That she gets in the mouth, and then you see the body kind of, you know, tumble through the trees. I would have liked to have seen them go a little further with that, as far as like make it a little more gruesome.
There was potential there.
There was definitely potential, and then the Lindy Booth, when they brought her in and dropped her, and you get to see like the barbed wire, you know, through her mouth. Hmm. And, you know, they hack the limbs off and you see the body kind of laying there with the severed limbs, you know, or what was remaining of the severed limbs. I thought that looked pretty good, but I'll let Candy talk, but I've got something to say about the cabin.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking effects, there were some really great effects in here, but there's only like a little sprinkling of them. There could have been, that would have made it a better film is if it had. Now, I disagree with Sean. I don't think the makeup on the hillbillies was great. Like I said, I think they all look like sloth from fucking... But I just didn't think they needed to go that far. They could have just done them like a more realistic sort of like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre type where they're obviously hillbilly looking, but, you know, they're not like all these deformed monsters or whatever, you know? It was just overkill. But as far as effects, it was more like we had some great stuff. We could have had, if it was like more of that, a lot of it, a lot more blood, a lot more, you know, crazy gore, it would have been a better film. I like gore.
Yeah, I think so as well. And you know, that's one of the things that I hope they sort of learned from. And when it comes to the remake, one of the things, and I'll let you speak in a second, Sean, because you said you had something to say about the cabin, but one of the things that did bug me, you know, you were talking about the death of Carly in the trees, you know, when she gets the sort of axe through the face. And that's really, aside from the police officer who shows up a little bit later on, that's really the last death of the movie, you know, and... there's a lot of movie still to happen between then and the end. And that makes the whole pacing of the movie just feel really bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you've got, you know, we've had a number of deaths up until that point. You know, you've had the two friends who stayed behind. You've had Simon, you know, getting his death. Then we've also got Carly. And you've gotten the two at the very beginning as well. So it just means just like, right, we've got these deaths in, and then boom, here's half an hour of movie where nothing really happens. And so it just makes the whole thing feel very disjointed for me. And also as well, like you say, for me, that's my favorite kill of the movie as well. And so for me, that's where the movie peaks. And it's a very similar thing. Nothing else that happens after that really reaches that, and I don't want to say that height because that's not a very high bar that we've set, but nothing else in the movie really reaches that height for me. If I don't know, like, what do you think about the pacing?
Yeah, I thought the pacing was off. I mean, the whole movie, it none of it felt natural, I guess you could say. And I think one of the things that I do when I watch films like this is I try to put myself in their, you know, their situation, their scenario, and how would I handle it? And that's why I'm curious about the remake, because we talk about how something from the 70s isn't quite as scary nowadays because things have changed so much. You know, if something like this happened today, you know, and I'm you know, the main character and I'm sitting in my Mustang on the highway, I'm just gonna open up, you know, MapQuest or my map app, find a different route, and off I go. You know what I'm saying? So it's, you know, it works for the time, you know, the era that they had flip phones and they didn't have, you know, GPS and things like that. But so I'm curious to see, you know, how they did that. Not that that really makes me want to watch the remake.
What they do now is just like, oh, I don't have service.
Right, yeah.
That's an easily solvable problem in when they just try to update these kind of films. But, you know, for me, with the pacing, I completely agree. It's completely disjointed. And they do a lot of things that are just nonsensical. Like, okay, where they're in the little car ripoff Texas Chainsaw Massacre scene where all the cars are. And they're like, okay, I'll run this way and distract them. And then you guys run the other way. And then, So the guy runs, he gets shot, and then the other guy runs the other way.
Yeah, it was kind of off-putting.
We were like, what? And also, I got to throw in, and this is funny, and you can cut out if you want. But at the very beginning, we have absolutely no intro to these characters. I didn't even realize half their fucking names till halfway through the movie. But, okay, so, like, I guess it's Francine and Evan? Is his name?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I thought the way that she was talking to him, okay, is she's like, oh, mom, mom hates it when something happens to her. This is mom's whatever. And the way she's talking to him is how I would speak to my brother. Because when you're talking to a friend or a boyfriend or a girlfriend, you would say, my mom would hate this. But when you're talking to, like, your sibling, you're like, oh, mom's really going to hate this. I thought they were brother and sister.
I picked up on that as well.
Thank you. And okay, I thought they were brother and sister. And then they get all, like, sexy a little bit. And I'm like, so what happens in West Virginia stays in West Virginia? What the fuck is going on here?
I thought
it was an incest thing. Like, okay, well, we're in fucking West Virginia. Let's do it.
No, I definitely picked up on that as well. And yeah, the first time I watched this, I was a little bit, oh, what's going on here?
I was like, I thought they were siblings. What the fuck?
And I remember the first time I watched it as well. Like later in the film, I don't know who says it. I think it might be Carla. She says something about Evan and Francine, and I remember sitting thinking, I don't know who is that.
Yes, exactly. I'm like, oh, those were the people at the beginning. All right. So I'm saying that's when I figured out people's names.
Yeah. Sorry, Sean, we've kind of gone on a bit of a diversion there, but you said you had something to say about the cabin.
Okay. Yeah. No, it's okay. So two things actually. The first is on House That Screams. Dave and I kind of always have this back and forth when we watch these films about our adult OCD. And, you know, it usually refers to scenes where like a house gets like really destroyed. Like I know we talked about in Dead Alive with the lawnmower scene and the blood going everywhere. Like we start getting into panic mode because like we feel like we have to clean everything. And so going into this cabin, like I really got that OCD, like just the place was just dingy and dirty and, you know, blah, 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 which is fine. I mean, that's what they needed to go for because of the atmosphere and this, you know, the backwoods, you know, hillbillies or whatever. So, you know, but it piqued my OCD. But my main point about the cabin is this. So they're hiding under the bed and the Hilljacks come in and they've just murdered their friend and dropped it right in front of your face. They've hacked off limbs. And then they decided to lay down for a little nap, a little siesta. And so our heroes decide to quietly creep out from under the bed. Mm-hmm. Now, doing this, and I know for me, and I'm not a tough guy, I'm not a hard ass, but as for me, I just watched you slaughter my friend, and now you guys are asleep. I'm going to grab the closest fucking sharp object I can, and I'm going to murder all of you in your sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's enough of them to take care of the three.
There was four of them at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, everybody grab something and start murdering, and then you know, we're free.
Yeah, and you've killed them. You've saved me another, 45 minutes of sitting through this? Like, game over, you know, it's done. And so that kind of, when I saw him, like, slowly start to creep out, and then when the two from the back room, and I looked at Candy, I said, okay, somebody's going to hit something.
I said that.
Somebody's going to make a sound. It's going to wake them up. You see it so many times. And, you know, I'll be damned if it didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? With the spring on the door, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, it was kind of off-putting to me. Like I would have loved to have at least seen them, you know, take one of them out. If they get all of them, at least take one of them out. Because you have the prime opportunity. Just when they walk in there, you can see all the fucking things hanging off the wall. I know there was a crowbar. There was, you know, all of these
weapons everywhere.
All of these things hanging off the wall that I'm sure, hell, they could have probably broken a plate and stabbed him with, you know, a piece of porcelain. But
so yeah. Here is my issue with this scene, and I completely agree with you. That's, you know, you raise a really, really good point. But here's my issue with the scene. It's just after they leave the house, right? So they've woken these guys up, and these mountain men, they run up the hill and they see them leave the house. So they know that they're no longer at the cabin. Sorry, not the house. They know they're no longer there. I don't understand why they don't just go back the way they came. Because they know the way they came will lead them back to their car, and that road will take them back to the main road. So right. they then go and just decide to go deeper into the forest. Like, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. You know that safety, and it's not a case of, oh, well, you don't know how serious it is yet, because you've seen them hack and dismember one of your friends. Go back the way you came. That made me so angry.
I know.
And, you know, that's just another thing in a long line of stupid decisions that these people make. That scene that we're talking about, you know, where they're approaching the house or the cabin, you know, and you see all the cars, and then they're looking through the cabin. By the way, the audacity to just walk into someone's house.
right.
I know you needed a phone, but you don't just walk into people's homes. That happens all the bloody time in horror movies. Anyways, you know, it's so obvious that you're shouting at the characters. You see all this pile of sunglasses and the pile of car keys, and it's like, can't you see what's going on here? Like, it's insanity. Like, just
but they just gotta keep exploring. Like, they're gonna find something even more disturbing. Like, that's disturbing enough for me to get the fuck out.
Yeah, like, I'd be seeing that and be like, yep, not dealing with this. I'll get the next cabin. I'll get the next cabin in the next 100 miles. You know, I'll just walk. Thank you very much. I'm not... But also, as well, like, you've got the car keys. Just grab one of the cars.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's so many, like, just glaring things. Like, it's just, like, these people have no logic. Like, what universe is this?
Yeah, well, I mean, and
it's common sense.
It goes all the way back to the very beginning of the film for me. Is, you know, dude comes around the curb and smashes the shit out of your car. I'm not going to hang out with him.
They get very friendly very quickly, don't they? And, you know, it's the scene for me that I noticed it as well, where Scott dies and he gets the arrows in the back. And Chris is like restraining Carly and he's wrapping himself around her, and I was like, you just met this woman like half an hour ago, what are you doing? Right. Leave her alone. And they become very friendly very, very quickly,
and once they realize he's dead, they stay there idling for a good minute to 2 minutes. Like, he's dead, go.
You're absolutely
right. I know you're sad, but you need to drive or you're gonna die too.
And you know, we've already obviously talked about the fact that they lit glow sticks in the watchtower and turned the radio all the way up to the full. And, you know, we probably could sit here for another half an hour just pointing out the mistakes that these characters have made.
But none of them have any lick of common sense.
No, not at all. And it's
survival instinct.
You know, it's funny because when they approach the watchtower, you know, Carly sort of shouts to try and see if there's anyone up there. And Jesse sort of turns around and shushes her like he's haven't been making stupid decisions the entire fucking time, you know? like, the characters in this, I mean, I'm with you guys, you know, I like, you know, Eliza Dushku and Desmond Harrington. I think they're good actors. I don't think any of the acting in this movie is particularly bad. Like, you know, I'll give, even though the characters are dumb and make really stupid decisions, I think the acting is of a decent standard. I wouldn't go really much higher than that. But
I'd have to blame it on the script, and I told Sean the script consists of, hi, hello, hey, go, wait. Oh, you know, it's it.
And in what's her name, Carly, in her case,
I can't.
Oh, I was.
That's the whole script right there.
Every single time I watch this movie, because I've seen this movie quite a few times now, but every time I watch this movie, she annoys me more and more and more with every watch.
I know. Because she's just dead weight.
You know, yeah, absolutely. She doesn't really bring anything to the... She's there for her kill, you know? She doesn't really bring anything else to the group other than that, which I felt like, you know, that Simon sort of did. Simon sort of... I at least sort of felt brought a little bit of the... I don't know, like a little bit of kindness to the group that the others seem to be lacking, because everyone else is very, very aggressive, and I felt that they needed to just have someone in there. And obviously, for me, Carly didn't really bring that much else. Now, I mean, we've been going for about an hour now, and I don't really want to talk about this movie for too much longer.
Because
it's quite
impressive, mostly but, not good things.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you guys would like to highlight that I'm going to assume bothered you rather than enjoyed? But either or, is there anything else in particular that we've not really touched upon yet that you guys would like to talk about?
Well, we already did touch upon it, but I just want to kind of underline it. Considering that this came out the same year as the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like if you're down to like picking one of these, you know, either Wrong Turn or the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, please watch the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's fucking amazing. This movie, it just pales in comparison. It's like, it feels like a date movie, like a way to go score with a girl or something at a scary movie. You know, it doesn't really feel like it feels like a mockery of the genre.
Yeah, I get that. It feels very much like that cinema movie where you stretch and try to put your arm around the girl, doesn't it?
Right.
Yeah. Put your dick through the bottom of the popcorn.
Oh my God! Gross.
I don't know about that trick. I don't know what you're talking about. Sean, is there anything else for you that you'd like to touch upon?
Jeremy Sisto, he was, I guess, the comedic relief in this. Mm-hmm. I wanted him to die.
Especially when he ran the wrong way.
Yeah. When he started taking arrows in the back, I'm just like, more. Shoot more.
I think that's it's a really key thing, because, you know, we love our villains, don't we? Between our show and your show, you know, we love our big villains. We love our we love our Freddies and our Jasons and Michaels and all the others. And, you know, me and Rob had a good discussion about where sort of Chucky ranks in that. And, you know, but I think the thing is, even though sometimes you really love your villain, you're still rooting sometimes for those sort of the main characters. You know, in Nightmare on Elm Street, you're still rooting for Nancy. You're rooting for Laurie Strode. You know what I'm sort of saying? And then here in this movie, I'm not rooting for any of these guys. I just want them all to die. You know, and I think that's such a big thing as well, isn't it? Like, if you can make your main characters, your main protagonists, even just remotely likable, then I think the viewers are going to be that little bit more forgiving as well, you know, and
more invested in it. Yeah,
absolutely. You know, and it goes back to what we were talking about, you know, with the sort of cleanliness of the movie, doing these little things, like just making your characters a little more likable, adding in those sort of little details. You can have a big fuck off glaring plot hole in your movie, but you know what, we might be a little bit more forgiving about it, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so, there's so much as horror fans, you know, we all, between us, every single horror fan likes at least one movie that is actually just shit.
Like, oh, I'm guilty.
But we love them for these kinds of reasons. We love them because they've got a character in them, you know, that we really, really, really root for. Or we love it because it's got a specific scene that we just think is really cool and awesome, you know? This film doesn't have that at any point. This film's got one or two really decent scenes and some really good ideas, but it never follows through on them anywhere near enough for me, anyway, for me to ever really consider this as a movie that, you know what, I'm going to remember fondly.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay. So last call then. Anything else you guys want to mention before we move on to our next segment?
No, I can't think of anything.
I have one little thing. And
yeah, go on.
It's kind of one of my things that I say on my show all the time. You gotta make us care. We have to have a little bit of depth to the characters if you want us to care about their death.
Yeah.
I barely knew anybody's name. So we had no depth. They could have used some of that extra time where they're just running around fucking off near the end. Could have used that at the beginning to kind of introduce the characters. I could see their attempt to give some depth when, you know, Carly and her boyfriend were like, oh, we're going to get married. Because I'm like, I'm like, I know they're going to die. And this is their attempt to get us to care about that death, those deaths. And I didn't care.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could have easily been done if this had been paced and better.
Yeah. And you know, like you find out at the beginning, Desmond Harrington's character, he needs to be in Raleigh by 7. I don't know that we ever found out why. But if
something medical.
Yeah. But if
I don't know.
If you would have told me, like, you know, maybe his daughter's having her first chemotherapy treatment or something, like, yeah, maybe I might, you know, care a little bit more about, oh God, we got to get this guy to fucking Raleigh.
Well, that's, yeah, you know, like if you go through, if you sit there and go through the characters, you know, and you think about the depth, like the depth or lack of depth, you know, the Chris, we know he's a doctor, we know he's trying to get to Raleigh, that's it.
Yeah.
Jesse, we know that she likes the woods and that she just split up with her boyfriend. That's it. That's all we know about them. Scott and Carly, we know they're getting married. That's literally all we know about them. And we know that Francine's mum owns the car, and that's it. That's all. And
yeah, and the guy like to smoke weed. Apparently not her brother.
And
yeah,
they like to smoke weed. And that's literally it. That is all we know about these characters. There's absolutely zero depth to them. And right, you know, we've all seen horror movies that goes so deep into the depth of their characters. You didn't even need to do that here, because at the end of the day,
just
this is
a little. This
is
a little.
Exactly. This is still just, you know, a schlocky sort of slashery type movie, and the, you know, you don't need huge swathes of depth. You literally need 2 or 3 sentences at various points, and that is it. And that is it. And that would have made,
and they certainly had the room to do it.
And that would have made an exponentially better movie. So that's a big, big failing for me on the scriptwriters, on the director, because, you know, the actors themselves, they can only work with what puts on the script, so...
I felt like they did their best with what they had.
Yeah, I would definitely go with that as well. Like, I didn't think they themselves, but in terms of their characters, I know nothing about them. I do not care when you die. In fact, I'm actively happy when we...
Yeah, because, like, we're rooting for you to die. Can't because, wait. Please kill her soon.
You're actively cheering for it as well, because every time one of them dies, you know you're one death closer to the end.
Right. There's a finite number of them, so hurry up.
Exactly, exactly. But if that is everything, then let's move on, and we'll get into a little bit of trivia about this movie. I hate to say that there's not a huge amount of it, so a few of our episodes lately have been a little bit trivia light, and I must try harder. We'll start with the financials, though. The budget of this movie is $12.6 million, which I think is wasted.
I
don't know what that money has gone on, because it's certainly not gone on effects. It's, you know, I don't know. Like, I could get into that discussion. The box office for the movie is decent, though. It made $28.6 million at the box office, so it more than doubled its money. So it did, and so therefore you can see why sequels were commissioned. But having said that as well, I mean, we've seen movies that have performed far better than that at the box office.
Yeah, I feel like this movie set us up for a sequel.
Oh, absolutely. It was the sequel bait at the end was insane. Yeah.
There at the beginning of the credits, right there it is.
Desmond Harrington broke his right ankle during filming, and they just filmed through him having a broken ankle. So a lot of those scenes where he is limping, you know, after he gets shot, they shot that before he broke his ankle. So he broke his ankle after that, so he had to act limping on the foot that he broke his ankle on.
Poor guy.
So yeah, I kind of feel bad for him. And Emmanuelle Tricky, I can butchering her name, I apologize. She plays Carly. She dislocated her shoulder during the jumping out of the watchtower scene.
Oh.
You know what would have been better? If she'd also dislocated her shoulder in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, she literally did it in real life. Do it in the movie. You've got a doctor there. He can pop it back into place and have her, you know, use her shirt as a sling or something. I don't know, but that just to me seems like such an easy thing to do.
Yeah, definitely.
There was hardly any promotion for this movie. Apparently the MPAA, they deemed that the majority of the trailers were too intense for public. So they had to cut all...
Wow.
they had to cut the trailers down because apparently they were too intense as well. Like, not too explicit or too gory, too intense. I don't know. Like, that's odd. I don't really remember. I was just becoming a teenager when this movie came out, so I don't really remember too well how much this movie was promoted over here in the UK. But I would imagine, you know, probably not. We're not massive on promoting horror movies here in the UK, to be honest with you. There's a real issue with the horror scene here in the UK just now, and I know some writers and directors have been, you know, trying to sort of highlight it as well. But that's a story for another day. I don't know if you guys noticed this. It's my last piece of trivia. So the scene where Scott dies and he gets the arrows in the back, when he falls and hits the ground, if you look at his leg, you can actually see the tube that's pumping the blood up to his wounds. I didn't even notice that. You can actually see it. And I hadn't noticed it before, and I read the trivia, so I actually went back, and it's actually very obvious. Like, you know, when I read that, I thought, oh, that must be quite subtle. Like, someone with a really keen eye has maybe spotted that. And no, I went back and watched it, and it's right there. It's where, I don't know how no one either didn't notice that or even just didn't care enough
I think I just didn't care enough to look. I was just kind of like, move on.
They maybe didn't have another yellow shirt for Scott to wear. So we're just gonna have to go with it. I don't know, that's all I've really got for interesting tidbits. Is there anything else that you guys know about this movie? I know you guys said you'd only sort of seen it very recently, but is there anything else that you sort of, any interesting tidbits that you guys have got?
No, I had read that John Carpenter had actually written a script very similar to this. Called Prey. Mm-hmm. And his idea was to make a film that was a mashup of Hills Have Eyes and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And, you know, for this to be so similar, I almost feel like maybe they ripped that off of him, but.
And if I can jump in with just a little other tidbit, The Hills Have Eyes, Wes Craven was so inspired by Texas Chainsaw Massacre that he did The Hills Have Eyes as sort of a inspiration from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So this is a ripoff of a ripoff. I just want to point that out.
Yeah.
Secondhand ripoff. Wow, that's really bad. You know what I really find very interesting as well is, you know, you were talking about there about the John Carpenter script idea that he had. And it goes back to what you were saying earlier, right, about depending on whose hands things are in. Because normally, right, if you was to hear of someone, like, not knowing the director, if you was to hear a Texas Chainsaw Massacre / Hills Have Eyes sort of inspired movie or ripoff, for lack of a better word, your thoughts instantly would be like, they're never going to do those two movies justice. But as soon as you find out that John Carpenter is involved or is helming or directing that movie, suddenly you sort of go, okay, right, I can get behind that.
I'll give it a chance, yeah.
Yeah, and that goes full circle to what we talked about, you know, at the beginning about remakes is, you know, it depends on whose hands they fall in.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I actually find that quite an interesting little tidbit. I wish John Carpenter just directed this and fixed all the mistakes.
Yes, please. But this, you got to think about this time in horror, you know, there was really good stuff coming out and there was some really this kind of stuff coming out. Where they were trying to appeal to, you know, sort of younger audiences and whatever. There was also really, really good stuff. It's just like, you know, it was such a crapshoot at that time. I remember I was already a mom when this movie came out. I was 23 and I had my daughter and, you know, but I had a friend that we would see horror movies together and it was always a crapshoot. You know, I remember to see Grindhouse when it came out a couple years later and that theater was empty. That thing tanked and it was a fucking masterpiece. And then, you know, something like this to hear it doubled, you know. I can't understand it. But again, you know, we're talking about it probably was the younger people that ponied up the money to watch this.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, we've got so many examples throughout history of movies that are absolute masterpieces that bombed, completely bombed, and I'm going to bring him up again, but the one that comes to my mind the most is The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing.
You know, oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're so...
And to me, that's that is an absolute masterpiece of a movie from start to finish, you know, and that tanked so hard. And what I think they were trying to do is, you know, they're obviously, you know, like you were saying, the younger year, they're trying here. I think they were trying to get the next generation's movie. If you look throughout all the previous decades, and you've got things like Night of the Living Dead, you know, you've got things like Halloween and Alien and Psycho, and then into the 80s, you know, you've got Nightmare on Elm Street, and you've got Child's Play, and you've got Friday the 13th, and whole, and, you know, I'm missing out a whole host of other amazing movies. Into the 90s, you know, you had Silence of the Lambs, and you had Candyman and Scream. And they were, I think they were looking for the 2000s version, weren't they? I think, you know, they're waiting to see what sort of stuck to the wall almost, you know, and this definitely didn't, stick for me anyway. Anything else before we get into the ratings?
No.
Superb. Right, let's talk about our ratings and our final thoughts. So I'm not gonna spoil Wrong Turn, the remake, but just for sort of a bit of context, I'm gonna give the comparison between the critics' ratings for this and for the remake. So I'll start with this movie. IMDb scored Wrong Turn 2003 6.1 out of 10. Metacritic scored it 32 out of 100. The Rotten Tomatoes critics scored it 40% rotten, with the Rotten Tomatoes audience not far behind scoring it at 54% rotten. Critics' consensus is an unremarkable slasher flick that fails to distinguish itself from others of its ilk. Now, if I take that around and tell you about the 2021 remake, IMDb actually scored it lower. They scored it 5.4 out of 10. Metacritic scored it higher at 46 out of 100. The Rotten Tomatoes critics scored it higher at 63% fresh, but the Rotten Tomatoes audience scored that lower with 47%. So it would appear that the critics liked the new one more, but the audience liked it less, and that concerns me greatly.
Yeah, because it's really, especially with horror, it's your audience that will make you or break you.
Absolutely. So with all of that being said, I don't know which one of you wants to go first, but what would you rate Wrong Turn 2003 out of 10?
So I'm gonna have to go with we'll say 5.5 out of 10.
okay.
I think that it deals with a lot of pacing issues. As we said, there were actors in this that I enjoy, but the characters that they played, I didn't care about, which is not a reflection on the actors, but more so on the screenwriting itself. There were a lot of scenes that were very jarring and off-putting to me. The special effects were decent, and, you know, the cinematography wasn't too bad. But, you know, I mean, we're talking about the mountains, you know. I mean, I guess the scenes with the cabin were kind of cool. It looked like they filled it with a bunch of shit that you'd take out of like an Applebee's or something. But, you know, I don't want to shit on this movie so much because, you know, we've done films like The Video Dead and Hard Rock Zombies. And I can't give it a lower rating than I gave those, because those were like
one star.
like drilling my fucking eyeballs out. But you know, yeah, I'll have to go 5.5.
Awesome. Candy.
Well, he was mad at me. We were kind of discussing our ratings last night, and I was like, 5 would be like the absolute most I could give this film. And he's like, oh my God, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, no, seriously, I'm just trying to be real. I keep it real on my show, and I'm gonna keep it real everywhere I go. I was generous in giving it a 4.5. Because a couple of those points are for our actors who are actually great actors. They've been great in every other thing that they were in. It's just, you know, I don't think they were given a lot of good material here, but they did the best that they could. So I got to give them some credit. the rest of it, you know, we had some decent effects. We could have used a hell of a lot more of them. And I would have preferred if they had left the mountain men obfuscated, you know, as far as like where you could only sort of see them a little bit instead of showing them full on. When you showed it full on, it was just sort of like, oh, that's disappointing. So yeah, 4.5, and that's mostly because Sean talked me up from my original rating. No, not. I'm not doing it because you convinced me. I'm doing it because I'm being nice.
Well, one thing I want to ask you just before I give my rating, because I, as you guys know, I keep a leaderboard of all the movies that we cover on the show. So I'm sitting here and I'm looking at our VHS rating, and I'm very interested. Just a quick sort of response from you guys. Would you rather watch this or VHS?
VHS.
Yeah, VHS.
It's interesting because we
were not nice to that film.
We were not nice to that film. Sean, your rating is actually higher than the overall rating for VHS. And Candy, your rating's exactly the same for this as it was for VHS. So no,
I keep it real.
That's very interesting. I'm obviously, as you guys are probably aware, known as it's the harsh critic on the Behind the Screams podcast. This movie does have some good stuff in it. It has some good effects, has a couple of good death scenes, but the problem that I have with it, that everything that is good about this movie is massively underutilized. So can't even enjoy the good things because there's just not enough of them. I'm with Candy as well. I'm kind of with both of you actually, because I didn't mind the makeup on the Mountain Men quite so much. However, I'm also of the opinion that less is more anyway, so I would have liked that little bit more mystery about them. Just to keep them obscure, either keep them obscured for the majority of the film, or even just like, you know, a little bit longer in the film. So I'm kind of there with both of you on that one. I think the acting's fine, but they're let down really by a horrendous script and just characters that lack any depth whatsoever. I'm gonna give this a 4 out of 10, just because I'm an arsehole.
Not really. I mean, my original score was a 3, so I added a 1.5 out of generosity. So
yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, I've definitely seen much, much worse. And I'm sure any horror fan can admit they've seen much, much worse things.
To me, the biggest sin you can commit is to bore me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was bored.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely not better than the other movie that you've been on the show to talk about, Shaun of the Dead. That was a significantly better movie.
That was the perfection of horror right there. That was perfect.
Absolutely. I think you will actually be a little interested when I read some of the listeners' responses we got to this movie. But first things first, combining our scores with the critic scores gives Wrong Turn an average rating of 4.7 out of 10. So right slap bang in the middle of all of our ratings. It puts the movie in 80th place of the now 94 movies that we have covered on the podcast. So it's right down there at the bottom. What is interesting is the movies that are around it. So the two movies that are directly below this film on our leaderboard, and harshly so, I would say, is A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge.
Oh, well, we just did that one.
That's,
no way.
It's the critics' fault. I'm sorry. I had this placed a little bit higher, but...
The critics are wrong.
The critics dragged me down. And it's also just below it is Rob Zombie's House of 1,000 Corpses.
And rightfully so. I notoriously hate that film. Everybody else loves it, but I hate it.
I would put the House of 1,000 Corpses a little bit higher, but that's a conversation for another day. Just above this movie on our list is Halloween 4. I would much rather watch. I'd much rather watch Halloween 4. Thank you very much. And also 2012's movie starring Jeffrey Combs, Would You Rather? Are we not fans of that one?
It just made me laugh.
No, not really, no.
Okay, no, that's fine. Of course, everyone, like, I'm quite a big fan of that movie, but that's the joy of podcasting and the horror fandom, as we all love.
I have some
things.
Unpopular opinions on my show.
Oh, yes.
I'm the loudest, so, you know, I get to drown everybody out.
I feel like I screwed up on my rating because we started this out, Ian, and you said you actually kind of liked this film and you gave it a lower rating than I did, so...
Look at you, generous.
I'm being very generous.
You see, the thing is,
I told you. Last night I said that's way too nice for this fucking movie.
That's way too nice for this podcast.
or even our podcast.
I mean, I think maybe I should change my statement a little bit. I was being a little generous at the beginning of the podcast there. Maybe nice is not the word I was reaching for. I think the whole aspect is that I just have seen so much worse than this.
We have too, but I mean, if you're just being honest and asking my opinions, I'm gonna
absolutely
110% honest with you and just be brutal. I'm brutal as a rule. Like I'm just like a horror queen, like I've seen it all, and you're gonna ask my honest opinion, you're gonna get it.
And that's why we love you.
I hope people listen to my show, that I hope they do.
Based on some of the reviews we've been getting lately, not everyone loves this show, but it's fine.
It's fine.
If you're not pissing someone off, you're not podcasting correctly.
You're not doing something right.
Right, let's move on and get into some of these listener opinions then. So we actually just threw it out a couple of hours ago. I was a little bit late on the button at getting this one out, but we've managed to get a couple of little opinions off of our Instagram. The Sleeper Must Awaken on Instagram. Can't stop myself. I love it, she says. Previous guest on the show, Angelito, he was on the show talking about Cabin Fever, says, in my book, it's amazing. So another fan of it there. The Crap Flicks podcast says, we'll watch anything with Dushku in it. Fair enough.
I'm guilty of that. I love her. I'm like in love with her.
I'm sure you're not the only one. And finally, friends of the show, the Horror Project podcast. I remember liking it at the time, although Aliza Dushku will forever be Faith for me. So, I find it really interesting, though. We threw it out, and most of the responses we got were really positive about the movie.
Those are some hot takes. They all live in West Virginia, don't they?
Probably. okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, just like when we put out, I was surprised when we were asking the opinions for, our last episode recorded was Freddy 2, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street 2. That we got so many positive responses because it was like a universally hated film, but see, they go through these renaissances.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Living Dead and, you know, the Nightmare on Elm Street 2. We did it with a slash in it because we also covered Scream Queen, the documentary. Mm-hmm. So I think it changed everybody a little bit.
Can I just say, we've covered, it's been a while ago now in this show that we covered Elm Street 2, but I think at the time, we sort of stated that, you know, it's probably the most underrated of the Elm Street movies. I was actually quite enjoyed it. But again, I know, like you're saying as well, you know, a lot of people, it's sort of going through its renaissance a little bit. I know there's still the other sort of coin groups of people who really aren't fans of the movie, but I actually think it's one of the better in the franchise, to be honest.
That's sort of what we came up with too, preview to our show. Sorry, our show's going to be way later than this, but you got a little preview of what's coming on our episode about it.
No, absolutely. You know, we are often surprised, and it's one of the reasons why I like getting to our listener opinions as well. We're often very surprised when we did Friday the 13th Part 2 earlier this year. It's neat, and I know the topics of the Friday the 13th movies are hotly debated on your show.
Yeah, it's just me and Erica and Camp Freddy and the guys all teaming up on us with Camp Jason.
So we none of us were fans of Friday the 13th Part 2. Friday the 13th Part 2 for me has always been sort of the lesser of those sort of big three franchises.
For me, great final girl, bad movie.
Yeah. It's always, and so none of us, we actually ended up rating it relatively low. But every comment we got when we threw it out onto the social medias, I love it. It's my favorite. It's, you know, it's the best one. And
we were sitting there,
but it was so, there were so many of them. We were like, have we watched the wrong movie for this? You know, because are we watching something completely, it actually made us doubt ourselves. But that's one of the reasons why we love doing it. But that's going to do it then for this week's show. Candy, Sean, thank you once again so, so much for coming back on the podcast. It's always such a blast having you on. I always have a really good time, and we always have a really, really interesting discussion. So thank you so, so much for coming on.
Well, thanks for having us. It's always a blast. And
Definitely.
we
Thank
love
you.
having you on our show. So it's just like great we can do all this together.
Absolutely. And between myself and you guys and, you know, the other people in our podcast and some of the other people on your podcast, we're all going to be appearing on each other's shows an awful lot over the course of the coming months.
Which is awesome.
It is. It's absolutely fantastic. I can't wait. I think I've already signed up for a couple more episodes with you guys. You know, I'll be reaching out to you guys again for coming back onto this show. And as I said earlier, Rob's just a new episode released tomorrow. Although if you're listening to this, that was last week.
It's a time travel like they do on our show.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, David's coming on the podcast very soon as well to talk about Night of the Living Dead. And
you'll enjoy him. He's a big Romero fan, just like me. So that's where we actually met a long time ago.
Oh wow, that's awesome. That's so awesome.
Stuff, yeah.
So yeah, we're going to be hearing a lot more of each other. Do you guys want to do your plugs and things again for our listeners before we get out of here?
I guess I'll just, you know, throw it out there again. You can find us. I run all of our socials, so you are actually interacting with me. It's at @house_screams on Twitter, Candy the Flannel Girl on Instagram. Those are the best ways to get in touch with our show. I'm mostly on Instagram, but I do have a TikTok started, but it's mostly like my beauty stuff, which I do want to bring up. I'm still trying to raise funds to expand the products available for my horror makeup thing. And it's beauty makeup, but it's horror themed. Like my first palette is the Final Girl palette. We have like the color Nancy, Jenny, we have Lori, which is kind of an orange for Halloween. You know, it's really, really cool. But I'm still raising funds. So there's a GoFundMe for that. And if you go on to our Twitter or my Instagram that I said, you can find links for that, or you can find the links if you want to buy that first luxury palette. By the time this episode comes out, I should have my new products up. We want to keep expanding. I know that there's a lot of people very interested in this project, and we can definitely use your help. So yeah,
absolutely.
I also want to plug our season 4.
You can find the links to the GoFundMe, to the socials for The House That Screams in the description of this episode. You'll also find them across our social medias. Sean, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram. That's really the only social media that I get on these days, Sean of the Dead. And then we do occasional live streams on Twitch, and that's twitch.tv/House That Screams, the House That Screams. Sorry, it came like telling me in my ears. And we've got some interesting live streams coming up. We've got one that we're doing Monday, which will be in the past when you hear this, but we're doing Nightmare on Elm Street 4 and 5.
And we've got some other ones planned that will be announced on our Twitter. So just stay tuned for that.
Awesome. Yep. Like I said, guys, you can find the links to the GoFundMe, all of those socials, the Twitch. You'll find them in the description of this episode as well. So please go check all of that out. Show The House That Screams some love. Give them your support because they absolutely deserve it. If you'd like to find us on social media, Twitter is @ScreamsBehind, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube is @BehindTheScreamsPodcast. We are also on Twitch. We do stream a whole variety of horror video games, and we do one live episode per month. So the final Saturday of each month, myself, Lucy, and Lindsay will do a live show. Last month, we talked about female representation in horror. The month before that, it was LGBTQ+ representation in horror. We don't have a theme for this month because I've been so busy. I've kind of taken a break for a month, but we will still be doing a live show at the end of the month, talking about, you know, just general horror movies and what's been happening with us. But like I said, we stream a whole host of video games there as well. Mostly horror, but I've been sort of starting to branch out and just streaming some regular stuff too. You can also find us on TikTok. Just search for Behind the Screams Podcast, and you can see Lindsay giving us loads of trivia and fun facts and some promotions as well about this podcast. And finally, if you love what you hear and you would like to give us even more support, you can subscribe to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/behindthescreams. We have two tiers. We have the £1 tier, we have a £5 tier. At the £1 tier, you get 1 week's early access to our regular Wednesday episode. You also get a couple of bonus episodes every single month. You get shout outs across our sort of socials and in the descriptions of shows and things like that. Subscribe at the £5 tier. You get a further 2 bonus episodes per month, totaling 4. You also get live video recordings 1 month early of our Wednesday episodes. And then a month later, they're released to the general public on YouTube. So yeah, patreon.com/behindthescreams to support us there. Up next on the show, we have a very, very interesting episode coming up. Me, Lucy, and Lindsay are going to be talking about Martyrs.
Oh, gosh. Wow.
Because we are gluttons for punishment, apparently.
Oh, my gosh, that movie.
We just talked about Eden Lake a couple of weeks ago, and now we're talking about Martyrs. We really, apparently, just don't love ourselves very much. I'm sure it's going to be a very, very interesting discussion. Quickly,
this is not a Serbian film.
Oh, I don't think we're ever going to cover that movie.
Yeah.
Eric is pushing for us to do it, but I don't think so.
There's, we have a very short, it's a short list, but we do have a list of sort of a few movies that we're just never going to touch on the show. I'm not sure if Serbian movie's been put on it yet, but I'm pretty confident it's not far off it. So, there's a couple of movies that we just sort of refuse to talk about, mostly because of their directors and things like that. But yeah, I'm sure you can work out what sort of movies I'm talking about from that. But just quickly before we go, brief thoughts on Martyrs.
Oh my God. For me, I'm pretty extreme, but no. No.
It's funny.
It's too much for me. I'm somebody, I can watch Takashi Miike films. Like, I don't know, man. I can't.
Sean, any thoughts?
I'm kind of with her. Like, you know, once you get to a point of extreme, like that's how I feel about Cannibal Holocaust.
Yeah.
You know, and with Cannibal Holocaust, it's more about the killing of the animals, not so much the killing of the people. but yeah, it's that a Serbian film, Martyrs, they all kind of rank up there with films that shall not be named.
That's fair enough. It's going to be interesting. Neither Lucy or Lindsay have seen it yet.
Okay. That's going to be really interesting.
And I've been trying to pre-warn them for a number of weeks now, right? Like, you're going to be, this is a movie, like, prepare yourselves. This is a hard-hitting movie. This is extreme.
It's disturbing.
It's very disturbing. And at one point, I was like, am I maybe overselling this a little bit to them? And then I thought to myself, I was like, no, I'm really not overselling this to them.
Yeah.
Hopefully I don't scar them for life, but I'm sure they'll be fine. But until then, Candy, Sean, thank you once again for coming onto the podcast. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you to everyone at home for downloading and listening to this episode. We really appreciate you too, and we hope you will join us next time on Behind the Screams.